Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. The unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Yes, friends, NOLA Drinks, we'd be happy to give a speech to the Boy Scouts. As a matter of fact, even if we extolled the virtues of alcohol as we do on this show to that group, I still think we couldn't screw it up worse. As a matter of fact, if I had to guess, it would be raised canteens or Dixie cups or whatever they might be, right from when we walked out to at least 5 minutes after we walked off the stage. So, hey, there you go, friends. We got a good show coming up for you today. Our Tales of the Cocktail coverage begins, continues. It doesn't begin. It began. It continues as we move forward. We're going to take a little trip to Mexico. And no, by the way, I'm not saying that I got some sort of call from the president of the Mexican Alcohol Association asking me to do the show. Okay, just going to say that as well. But yeah, we're going to take a little trip to Mexico, friends. Put together three of the interviews that we did during Tales of the Cocktail, which took place a couple weeks ago. We got a whole lot more great stuff to roll out. I was putting a lot of this together over the past days, just sort of assessing all these wonderful interviews that we had. And there's just so much good stuff to unpack there. And of course, the event happened a couple weeks ago. But we're mostly talking to these people that are producers, global ambassadors for brands, these things. So all the information contained therein, friends, is still very topical. Doesn't really lose a shelf life there, anything like that. So lots of good stuff coming up. We're going to be talking about Pisco on future shows, some craft spirits, cachaça, which is a super cool category. It's a Brazilian distillate made from sugarcane juice. Sort of think a cousin to rum, very much like a close cousin to rum, agricole, all kinds of other good stuff coming up. Of course, last week we talked about shochu. We pulled one of those interviews, which is a Japanese distillate. So lots of interesting stuff coming up. And as I said, we're going to take a little trip to Mexico today. We're going to talk to Graciela Gonzalez, who is from the Gonzalez Distillery down there in Jalisco. And they're a tequila producer. So we're going to talk to them a little bit. Or talk to her, excuse me. And then we're also going to talk to Larry Smith. And Larry Smith is with Casa Duristi. And they produce, it's really interesting, it's a distillery in Mérida, which is in the northern part of the Yucatan Peninsula in southeastern Mexico. And the distillery's been there since, we talked about this in the interview, I believe 1935, something like that. And they make a pastis. So what I mean by pastis, anise liqueur. So think Herb Saint, think absinthe, one of those, but this is made in Mexico, been made there for decades, and it's actually a rum base. So they use anise, they use honey, and then rum from a local cane. Really interesting story, very, very interesting liqueur. So we're going to talk to Larry a bit about that, but the history of the distillery. And then we talked to Juan Pablo Gonzalez, who is with the Miel de Tierra distillery, and they're a mezcal producer. So very interesting, some interesting stuff coming up there. Stay tuned for that. Later on in the show, friends, it's Culinary Month, and we're going to talk about that at the end of the show after the interviews are over. It is a great opportunity to go out and try restaurants here in New Orleans for a great price that you've been meaning to try. So there you go. Wanted to mention something coming up this weekend. Yes, it's a big weekend here. It's always a big weekend here in New Orleans, right? But what's going on here this particular weekend? One of the highlights of the music festival world that we do here, and we do them well here. By the way, we do them well. So if you've never been, if you're listening in podcast land, which I really appreciate, and you've never been to New Orleans, or you've never been to one of the milieu, excuse me, that's what I'm trying to say. I'm going to say million, some sort of combination of that, of just the huge number of music festivals that we have here. You got to come for one of them. And this is actually certainly one to come to. It's Satchmo Summerfest. And that's brought to us by the good folks who bring us French Quarter Festival, arguably my favorite music festival on the planet. But Satchmo Fest, yeah, it's a little hot. Takes place this weekend, first weekend in August every year at the U.S. Mint. Of course, Satchmo, we're referring to the terrific, wonderful, arguably, I would argue, the most important musician ever, Louis Armstrong, New Orleanian, and it celebrates his life, his music, a lot of traditional jazz, a lot of contemporary stuff going on, but all with a nod to Satchmo. It's great. The festival has actually kind of expanded a good bit here. It takes place, as I said, at the U.S. Mint, which is just right there on the cusp of the bottom of the French Quarter, right there at Esplanade by Frenchman Street down that way. It's the old U.S. Mint here in New Orleans. And they have what it looks like. Now it's gone to three full days. It used to be a day, then like these festivals do. And then it was two, Saturday, Sunday. And then now it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And there's actually a kick. I'll start here. There's a kickoff party going on tonight. That's a paid event. The rest of the festival, I believe, is still free. So you can just show up. You can't bring outside food or booze into the grounds of the Mint because that's how they support the festival. So buy. It's always good food out there. Sometimes drinks are a little shaky, but there's cold beer, so you got that going for you. And there's frozen drinks, and that's fun. But, you know, go try some of the food. A lot of local restaurants will be out there serving up some really good grub. Anyway, but the kickoff party is taking place at the Omni Royal Orleans Hotel, of course, right there. It's technically 621 St. Louis Street. This came up during Tales of the Cocktail because everybody thinks that it's on Royal Street, which, you know, kind of one of the entrances is that you typically go into is on Royal Street, and it is called the Omni Royal Orleans Hotel, but technically 621 St. Louis Street, right there at the corner of Royal and St. Louis. And that is from 7 to 9 p.m. this evening. I don't know if that's taking place in Irvin Mayfield's Jazz House or in one of the ballrooms or exactly how it goes, but it's $65 for one person or $100 for a couple. You can go to Eventbrite. Actually, if you want any information, you can just go to fqfi.org/Satchmo, and that'll get you there, and you can see that event. FQFI is French Quarter Festival Incorporated, fqfi.org, and you'll see, you just go to their homepage and you'll see all that stuff. But that looks like it's going to be good. There's an evening and see music, drinks, all that stuff. There's going to have heavy hors d'oeuvres and a full open bar. Cocktail attire requested. Yep. So that'll be fun tonight at the Royal Orleans, 7 to 9 p.m., as I mentioned. excuse me. Moving to the music, which kicks off in full gear tomorrow, full day, starts at noon, two stages going, and then Saturday and Sunday, they have three stages going. They're all at the Mint, so I'm assuming, because we kind of have this setup where opposite corners of the grounds outside of the Mint, they'll have two stages there, which they do during French Quarter Festival, for example. And then there's a third one, which they're calling it which stage is that one? So they have the Cornet Chop Suey stage, which is outside. They also have where I'm going with this is that the other stage, as this information comes up, is I'm assuming it's going to be the auditorium inside, which is at the top floor of the U.S. Mint. And they operate that, I believe, to a degree in conjunction with the U.S. National Jazz Park. It's a U.S. National Park, of course, and it's all focused on jazz music. Got to know that, too. That's the Baco Town stage. I'm guessing just by looking at the map that it's going to be upstairs. That's a beautiful, beautiful venue in which to go see music. Sounds great. Really comfortable, awesome place. A lot of programming that the park does there, by the way, during the day sometimes and things like that. Lots of free stuff. Certainly worth checking that out. So we have the Red Beans and Ricely Yours stage and the Cornet Chop Suey stage. Those are both outside, and then the Back of Town stage going on. All kinds of really, really good people playing. Nicholas Payton, who is amazing, is making his festival, Satchmo Festival, debut tomorrow, I believe, at 3 o'clock. A lot of really good stuff. Then on Saturday, we have people like Tim Laughlin, John Boutte, Treme Brass Band, Shamar Allen and the Underdogs, Bill Summers. Man, that's a list right there, huh? Joe Lasty's playing also, Topsy Chapman and Solid Harmony, the fantabulous Leroy Jones is playing, Shannon Powell and his traditional all-star band. Yep. Oh, and here's one on Saturday also, Corey Henry's Treme Funk Tet. If you have not seen Corey Henry, you need to see Corey Henry. The energy is amazing. That guy is amazing. All right. I saw him a few months ago at Armstrong Park at a festival not too long ago. And wow, I was blown away by that guy. He is awesome. Sunday, we have people like Evan Christopher playing, Pinstripe Brass Band. That is an all-female brass band, by the way, and that's a really cool thing. There was an interesting academic paper, which I haven't had a chance to read yet, that was talking about the social construct of sort of the male-dominated scene that is the brass band, and what the Pinstripe... Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's the Pinettes Brass Band that I'm talking about. Pinstripe Brass Band is an old, traditional band. I messed that up. I'm sorry. Forgive me. But anyway, the Pinettes Brass Band, I'm going to go on with that point. The Pinettes Brass Band is an all-female brass band. I'm not sure if they're playing, but yeah, they're worth checking out too. And talk about, you know, stepping into a male-dominated arena and bringing brass music from a female perspective. Pinettes Brass Band, that's awesome. This was the Pinstripe Brass Band, which is a longstanding brass band here in New Orleans. Forgive me for that one. I should know that. Just got excited because I want to talk about the Pinette's Brass Band. Lots of good. And then Jeremy Davenport's playing, Palm Court Jazz Band's playing, stuff like that. So I have been salvaged closing out the Cornette Chop Suey stage on Sunday from 7 to 7:50, the original Pinette's Brass Band. All women's brass band. Go check them out. So there you go. Satchmo Fest again. If you want more information on that, check out fqfi.org/Satchmo, S-A-T-C-H-M-O. There you go. Friends, I mentioned we talk a little bit about Tales of the Cocktail coming up here. I wanted to highlight, and I was kind of going through this a little bit last week, and we have some more certain highlights that I wanted to mention. First and foremost, one thing I wanted to say is, and I did touch on this before, a lot of these segments that we taped at Tales of the Cocktail, I actually recorded these at Sylvain, which is right there on Charter Street, I believe 625 Charter Street, if I'm not mistaken, right by Jackson Square. That's our good friend of the show, Robert LeBlanc, and the LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, who are the proprietors of Cavan. Of course, Sylvain, as I mentioned, Barrel Proof and Mobar. And they were kind enough to let me set up for 3 of the days of Tales of the Cocktail and kind of use the restaurant as home base to tape segments. And so I just want to give a special shout out to those guys for working around me, allowing me to be there, providing me with a huge number of glasses. I made sure that everybody got to taste something though that worked there. Just want to make sure everybody's clear on that. But yeah, I really want to give them a shout out. Really quickly, I wanted to mention too that one of my favorite highlights was an event that we went to that was put on by Napoleon Mandarin Liqueur. That was a liqueur that was originally created for Napoleon Bonaparte in the late 1700s or early 1800s, something that he loved. It is a secret recipe, but it's a mixture of aged cognac, mandarin orange peel, herbs, and spices. Well, they were celebrating their, when it became available to the public, was much later, as I said, 1892. So they were celebrating their 125th anniversary. They had an event at Napoleon House. And that event, well, we got to taste, they made 125 bottles in honor of the 125th anniversary of the liqueur. But in this case, it was made with not just aged cognac, but 125-year-old cognac. And they had one of the bottles there, and it was a beautiful bottle, and it was done in a gold leaf. And I actually was one of the few people who got to put on a pair of white gloves because you can't get the oil on the gold leaf from your hands and actually touch the bottle and pose with the bottle. So I was really honored to be asked to do that. Got a little taste, of course, of the special liqueur. It was amazing. Kind of did the, and the current one, you know, the regular one is really good, but doing a side-by-side, man, 125-year-old cognac, that was something. Check it out, Napoleon Mandarin Liqueur, really cool. I'm going to be posting something a little bit later on Instagram, some pictures of me there touching the bottle, because that's really, it was exciting for me. I don't know. Like it if you want, but hey, whatever. Friends, hey, we're going to continue on with our Tales of the Cocktail coverage right here after the break. We're going to be right back, first talking to Larry Smith of Casa Duristi, then on to Juan Pablo Gonzalez of Miel de Tierra, and then we're going to close out the interviews with Grace Gonzalez from Distillery Gonzalez Gonzalez. And then we're going to talk about culinary and some other things. Friends, come on back.
Last night I thought I died and went to whiskey heaven. You know the sun never shines in whiskey heaven.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special 2-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Hey, yeah, we're here during Tales of the Cocktail 2017, as you know, and we are continuing what we're doing, and we are taking our journey through things here, tasting different things, and I'm pleased to be joined by Larry Smith from Casa Teristi.
Casa Teristi. Larry Smith, Mexican Larry Smith.
Mexican Larry Smith. How does a Larry Smith end up from Mexico? How do you get the name Smith?
Because I have my father is American and my mother is Mexican.
Ah, okay. So and where in Mexico is your mother from and where in the United States is your father from?
My father is from New York and my mother is from Mexico City.
Ah, okay.
And I was born and raised in Mexico City and I've been here for 20 years. We are living in Houston.
And you live in Houston?
I live in Houston, and I represent the brand for the USA.
Okay, great. Now, how... So you were raised in Mexico City, then moved... Did you move to Houston? The first place you lived in the United States was in Houston?
Yes, it was Houston. I used to work in the spirit industry for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I used to work for Shefflin and Somerset. They used to have a joint with Diageo, and I was the marketing manager for the Southwest and the West Coast for Hennessy, Johnny Walker, Buchanan's, and all the brands that they used to have together.
Now, Larry, how did you get involved in the alcohol industry? How did that work?
Well, it was like one day I was sitting in the bar, and I met this guy from Brown-Forman, from Jack Daniels, mm-hmm. and I started telling him about how they... I was more focused on the Hispanic market, so I was telling him some ideas how he can promote his products, and then he invited me to come to the industry 20 years ago, and I've been... was little by little.
So you were not you didn't work as a bartender or anything like that. You met someone in a bar and then had a good relationship and went from there.
Exactly, and then I started getting involved on the spirits.
Fantastic. Now, how long have you been with
Casa Teristi?
Yeah,
Casa Teristi. I've been there for 5 years.
And how did you get involved with them?
Well, because the owner, we represent a big group from communications in Mexico, and the owner bought Casa Teristi 5 years ago, and he was looking for somebody to help him to promote his products on the USA. I was doing entertainment by that time. I was on the concerts and entertainment business for 10 years, and then he asked me to come back and help him.
And so were you doing music promotion?
I was doing concerts, Hispanic concerts at the Houston Arena and all over the USA.
Like the Tejero music and things, or what kind of music? And
I was rock, like Shakira, Luis Miguel, a lot of Julio Iglesias.
Yeah.
So I was doing as a promoter, working for a company called Showtime.
Okay, so not Tejano or anything like that, right?
No.
Okay, no. More rock. Okay,
gotcha. More rock and band. No, norteño, but more on the pop and rock side.
Okay, any Maná?
Yes.
Great band.
That's a good group.
I love Maná, man. that's a side story.
That's more the bigger shows, but yeah. Kind of.
Okay.
That's Live Nation.
Gotcha. Now Live Nation, which is almost everything.
That's exactly right? So. What they have left, that's what we take.
Yeah, right. Fair enough. That's great. You never know where this show is going to go, so exactly. I appreciate that. So tell us a little bit about the company. It's artisanal liqueurs, all from Mexico, correct?
Yes. You know, this Casa Teristi was founded in 1935 from the Teristi family. And they create...
And where in Mexico, Larry?
Mexico, in Mérida, Yucatán.
Okay.
Mérida. Mérida is one of the most beautiful cities in Mexico. Very secure and very close to the 40 minutes from the sea. And very good place to visit. Very close from... This is Riviera Maya, so it's very close from Cancun, from all the beautiful Riviera Maya.
Right. And it started out as a local distillery.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Then he started, Jose Teristi father started the business with Extaventun. That's the first liqueur that we're going to try.
Okay.
And he started doing, he has like a history on the Extaventun because they're supposed to be two women that used to appear in those years. One, it was a very good lady, another was no bad lady, but she was to get in love with the men.
So a ghost and a spiritus.
Exactly, the spiritus.
Okay. Yeah.
And then when one of them died, where it was the cemetery, this little flower started growing, and it was called La Flor de Extaventun. And that's where this particular syrup comes to do the Extaventun. Extaventun, the base is rum, the very particular honey called extraventum flour, and then the anise to give them the flavor. And it has been for many years, and it's very popular in all the south of Mexico.
So this was the original liqueur, more
this
or
is
less
original liqueur, yes, yes. And it's very, we've been trying to build the brand in the United States like 15 years ago.
Okay.
By Henry Price. You're familiar with Henry Price. He's a very well-known icon on the spirit industry, and he's helping us to develop and build the brand here in the United States.
Very interesting. So let's taste a little bit of this. So that's this one, and you just told us about it. So I'm going to have a sip. Keep describing that to us while
okay,
I have a sip.
Okay. So this is I was telling you the base is rum, and it has a very particular syrup from this flower, and then
and the anise,
and we are doing great on the USA because it's very good. You can try it neat, you can try it with ice, or you can try it as a cocktail. We're doing a lot of success with call them Mayan margaritas, like the golden margarita. Instead of putting the Grand Marnier, you put the extraventum, and it will taste. It's a great Mayan margarita.
I can see that.
Yeah, the Mayan has been for the past 10 years very fashion and very. It was everything about Mayan.
Right.
For the past years, it's everywhere.
Very popular and beautiful part of the world, by the way. So this is actually very unique. It's actually very thick in the mouthfeel, and I get the anise. I can see how that, and a nice herbal.
Exactly.
A very nice herbal note.
It's the seeds of the anise and the honey from the flower of extaventum.
Okay, very, very nice.
And then you can do like in, I don't know if it's very popular here, but they used to have, but you know the carajillos? Carajillos is a drink that you put a glass of ice, a shot of espresso, and then you put a shot of liqueur 43.
Yes,
but instead of liqueur 43, you can put the extaventum and call them Mayan Carajillo.
And so that would give it, with the liqueur 43 is more floral, and this would actually be more of an herbal note.
Exactly.
Than more of
this
an
is
anise,
more like, no? Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And then you put like small pieces of coffee, beans of coffee.
Sure.
And it tastes great.
That would wake me up in the morning.
Exactly. And also we were doing a Mayan, we call them a Mayan sacrifice shot. So you put half of tequila, half of extraventum, and a Luxardo sherry, which is supposed to be the heart, and a little bit of juice of the cherry, supposed to be the blood. And it's getting popular to do the Mayan sacrifice shot.
And is that a morning shot, Larry, or is that an evening shot, or any time of day?
It doesn't matter. When you feel sad or happy.
You feel sad. You sacrifice something.
You sacrifice, exactly.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, so, great. So, Larry, what we're going to do in just a second here is we're going to take a little break.
Okay.
And then we're going to come back and taste these other two and talk a little bit more. All right? We're going to take a little commercial break on this.
Perfect.
So, friends, hey, come on back to the Noel Drink Show. As you know, we are here at Tales of the Cocktail 2017, and we are recording at Sylvain, as we are. This is day number 2. Whenever you're hearing this, I can't exactly tell you because I'll let you do the math to figure out what that is. But pleased to be chatting with Larry Smith of Casa de Aristi, which is from Mérida, and that is in the north part of the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico from 1935. When the distillery started.
That's a very handmade liqueurs. I'm very art craft.
Yes, and we're going to taste a couple more that Larry has, and we're going to talk a little bit more about what these guys are up to. So, friends, come on back to the Noel Drink Show. Tales of the Cocktail coverage. Come on back.
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pontalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market. Making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot. flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO, 990 AM in New Orleans, and the podcast interwebs wherever you may be. Yes, we are covering Tales of the Cocktail 2017, and we're doing all kinds of stuff this week, as you know. You're hearing this after Tales of the Cocktail is over, so check back, see what our coverage was, all kinds of interesting things going on all week. This is day number two, Wednesday, of Tales of the Cocktail. You can get the podcast always on Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and the other one that I'm forgetting. Oh, Google, did I say that? Oh, iTunes, yeah, the big one. So there you go. And having a lot of fun chatting with a lot of different people. What the cool thing about Tales of the Cocktail is a lot of people bring very interesting, different things to town that we don't normally get to see, don't normally get to try, and no exception here is Larry Smith, who is with Casa de Aristi, which is a distillery. Interestingly enough, as Larry, you just said, started in 1935 in the northern Yucatan Peninsula in Mérida.
Exactly.
And that's a great story. Yeah. Now, I mean, we know distilleries go back in Mexico a very, very long time.
Exactly.
But in that part of the world, that's got to be somewhat unique, right? I don't think, were there a lot of distilleries decades ago in Mérida?
Well,
in,
or you know, not in really, Yucatan? But not really, because Mérida and Yucatan is more about cotton. You know, they used to have the cotton, right? A big industry of cotton in Yucatan, but also because they're across from Cuba and from all these islands that they produce a lot of rum.
Right.
You know, like Appleton and Havana.
Sure, Havana, cool.
There's a lot of distilleries, so they were all the islands around that make a lot of rum.
Right. Bring that a little closer there, Larry.
Okay.
There you go. Okay, perfect. Yeah, so, but that's interesting because when you associate, for most of us here in the States and in other places, when we associate distilleries in Mexico, we think, of course, tequila, we think of Jalisco, we think of mezcal, and as we all know, distilleries.
Exactly,
and
there's not too many rum factories or distilleries in Mexico, so it's very unique, our products.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, so all of the liqueurs that you make are all based, they're rum-based liqueurs.
They're all rum-based.
And it is locally produced rum, as you were telling me during the
time. Exactly, and we are now distributing through the USA and Europe.
Now, Larry, tell me where is the cane? Is the cane, the sugar cane, grown in Mérida, or?
Well, the cane's from different parts of Mexico. No, okay. Because sometimes you cannot have all the same factory to provide you the rum.
Okay.
So we get them from different parts.
So you use, when you're using the rum as a base, you're using a very, I'm going to guess, tell me if I'm right, using just a very clean, then white
rum.
Exactly.
Right?
No. It has to be very, and then we control everything. We can call them even our products organic products. We don't do that, but there are very, very, very natural products. We don't do any chemistry. The one that you're going to try right now, which is the Kalani, is the best, for my opinion, and a lot of opinion that people try, is that we want us the best coconut rum in the world, because we control the coconut plants. We own the coconut plants. We have our people. So we go from the beginning to the end to keep the same quality of the flavor and have the standard flavor. You have to be very careful that you have a standard product every time you try it. So we control the coconut plants.
Now, tell us how this is made a little bit, Larry. Is there a co-fermentation?
Yes, coconut fermentation. We have the coconut lands. We cut the coconuts. We squeeze them. So if you try it, it's a real coconut milk. We don't have any chemicals at all. So it's a real coconut milk with the rum.
The coconut is fermented separately and then brought together with the rum?
Exactly.
But it's not flavored. So just so we're clear, because I want people to understand.
It's not flavored. No, it's a real coconut milk.
Right.
And it's called Kalani, K-A-L-A-N-I.
And where does that name come from?
Kalani, I think it's from Hawaii.
That sounds very Hawaiian to me.
From Hawaii, yeah. I think I need to find a person. The other day, his name was Kalani. So.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to sound stupid and say that sounds very Hawaiian.
No, it is, because at the end, you know, most of the coconut rums come from... It's good for the beach.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. One, it's very nice because it's not flavored, so it doesn't taste artificial.
No, exactly. Yeah. I don't want to talk about other brands, but it's not even close to the competition I was telling you, it's real coconut milk.
Yeah, and that's an important part of this, and that's why I want to make sure that people understand that, is that when we think about flavored vodkas, we think about flavored rums, these sorts of things, this is a different process.
They really like it neat. Ladies love the product. With ice, where you can do piña coladas, or you can do with club soda, splash of lime. You can do, it's very good for mixology.
Yeah,
you can also do the carajillos that I was telling you. Instead of putting extaventun, put the Kalani.
Yeah, so Larry, what I could actually see with this being really very nice is using a part of this and then some overproof rum. You know, just regular rum, right? An overproof regular rum with a little bit of lime, and to go for sort of a spirit forward. Daiquiri would be
exactly.
Very, very nice.
It's very good for martinis. We have a lot of cocktails that you can do with a Kalani.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. So tell us about the second, the Uana.
The third one is Uana.
It comes
from a fruit that is not very well on the USA, because it's a very Caribbean fruit called Guanabana. They call them here soursop. But the problem that I've been having in the USA is people is not very familiar with the Guanabana. But it's getting very popular because it has very good things to prevent cancer with the guanabana. So it's getting popular all over the world.
Really?
With the guanabana, people is getting to prevent cancer and to try to be more healthy or to cure cancer. So if you read about guanabana, it's hard to pronounce, but a lot of people say like manamana instead of manamana, right. Guanabana.
Well, and actually sometimes you'll see it starts with a G often, and you'll see the juice in Mexico, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Guanabana.
Guanabana is very popular for ice cream,
right?
For to do the like coconut water, but guanabana water. So there is very popular, and it's getting, the problem is that there is not a very popular fruit in the USA because they don't have it here. But any place that you go from the Caribbean, or it's very well known also on the Asiatics, they know about.
My familiarity with guanabana is actually in licuados.
In licuados, exactly. Licuados de guanabana, you know, exactly.
Oh, absolutely.
And the milkshakes.
Yeah, and the milkshakes, and then with milk or with water.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually, as you said, it's a very popular fruit through Central and Northern America.
It's a great product. As soon as you try it, you really like it. So that's our challenge right now in the USA, is that people, how we can see or try to people taste it, you know?
Sure.
So as soon as they try it, they really like it, and it's great also for mixology.
Yeah, it's very nice that way, and one of the things that, just at first taste that I can see is that this could actually be substituted for Curacao, could be substituted for Grand Marnier.
Oh, you can do excellent mojitos with guana.
I can see the flavor. Absolutely.
You can do guanabana mojitos.
Yep.
Or even the Kalani, also the coconut mojito. So you can play a lot. And the good of these products is that you can try them also by itself.
Sure.
It's not that something that you're going to have a, like... bad taste or something. They're very fruity.
Yeah, and actually, since we were talking about, so you're making me think of Liquados in my yeah. in my time
exactly.
in Latin America. So actually, if you this just over crushed ice would be nice with just a little touch of lime on the top.
Exactly.
And
you know, you,
doesn't
you
need to be
look like you're an expert. I've got so many people that that you interview. So then people, but they're great products. Honestly, they're great products. And
it's very interesting.
I hope
stuff.
People can try them. And we have the casadaristi.com.
I was just going to ask you that question.
Or you can, okay, so. I can give you my email. It's larry.smith@casadaristi.com.
Okay.
And they can send us any questions or any information they might need to get the products.
And let me, because we got about 45 seconds or so left, Larry. So if people actually go, because obviously a lot of people go travel to the part of the, Cancun, Cozumel, this part of the world that we're talking about in the Yucatan. If you don't know Merida, it's a beautiful city. Should see it. Can people visit the distillery?
We're all over the duty free.
Okay.
In Cozumel.
But can people visit the distillery?
Of course, they just give us an email and I make it happen, no problem. So they can visit. When you go to Merida, send us an email and we make sure that you'll be there and leave the Casa de Aristi experience.
Beautiful. Thank you. Larry, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. Thanks to you for your time and consideration. And it's very nice to be here at Taste of Cocktail and with a personality like you.
Oh, thank you so much. Mucho gusto. Mucho gusto.
Okay.
Friends, coming back to the NOLA Drink Show. Hey, we're going to talk a little bit more about Tales of the Cocktail, a little bit more about what we're doing here. And thanks to Larry for being here from Casa de Aristi. Come on back.
Because my book has got a hole in it. Yeah, my book has got a hole in it. My book has got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay. An ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Yes, we are at Tales of the Cocktail, and we are taping, as you know, probably, hey, who knows exactly when this is going to air, a little bit after Tales is over. We're sitting here at our favorite spot, Sylvain, and it is a working restaurant. They have not yet opened, so they're juicing. Hollis is juicing over there. Mm-hmm. She's juicing and doing a good job. And I am very pleased to be joined by my next guest, who is Juan Pablo Gonzalez from the Miel de Tierra?
Yes, Miel de Tierra. That's correct.
So honey of the earth, man.
Honey of the earth. There's a very interesting story behind that if you want to get into it.
Please. Yeah, let's do it.
Because it speaks a lot about what we're trying to do with the brand. So as I was saying, I'm originally from the state of Aguascalientes, where I've grew up all my life, and it was very interesting.
So people know where that is. That's central Mexico. That's not too far from the AFA, right? And they're from Mexico City, a little.
It's 5-hour drive from Mexico City.
Okay.
Mexico City is a little bit more to the south.
Yep.
To the southeast. So they're both central. You know Mexico, how it kind of dips to the right.
Yep. Absolutely.
So then it's just kind of like a big chunk of central region. Aguascalientes borders with the state of Zacatecas, which is a really big state right in the center, desertic. So for me, growing up there was very interesting because being a really small state, it had a lot of influence from mezcal made from Zacatecas, which is a very particular type of mezcal, unlike I came to know any other made from every other region. So once I moved out of Aguascalientes, probably was when I was 24 or 25. I ended up meeting a lot of people who consider themselves to be mezcal enthusiasts in Mexico, and they had really strong beliefs, and they are beliefs, and I say that for a reason, regarding what mezcal is. And I was just very confused hearing them speak, because they obviously they had tattooed in their hearts how mezcal is supposed to be made, how it's supposed to...
Depending on where you come from, right? Exactly. As you're saying, in Mexico. So exactly. There's a very great deal of specificity as we talk about...
Exactly.
In, like you said, Zacatecas, as well as we get closer to the Pacific coast as well, that there's a very particular view, but it is a very broad category.
That's the thing, and I realized, and I really like telling a story from the viewpoint of somebody that was outside the industry... because I think that's the right way to get to know a new category, because you have to really understand the basics of it first. And you come to meet a lot of people that are so deep into the specifics of their mezcal that they forget the specifics, and they really lose that power to tell a really nice story that helps people understand.
So let me ask you this question, Juan Pablo. So, because one of the things that we know, and we've talked about this on the show, but just to reiterate, that there are... 200+ varieties of agave that are actually made into alcohol,
yes,
in Mexico, but
correct,
maybe 40 or 50 that are commonly used or somewhat commonly used to make,
correct,
mezcal.
Correct.
So we are kind of talking about, I'll use an analogy that I often like to use on the show. We're really talking about, let's use wine as an analogy.
I love that analogy.
Different analogies.
I love that analogy.
So the different varietals of mezcal, uh-huh, the different varietals, excuse me, of agave that we're talking about here, that is the differentiation that we're talking about. So people, we can maybe equate this, that wine should be made the way it's made in Burgundy, or wine,
right,
should be made the way, mm-hmm, it is in Bordeaux.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with mezcal, right? When you come from a region, people can be very attached
super
to the particular
attached
region, the type of agave that they use in their production method.
Yeah.
But it's a big world.
Exactly. You hit the nail in the head there. And why I love speaking about wine so much is because the mezcal from Zacatecas is made pretty much with the same essence as wine. And there's a very cultural reason behind that, and nobody really knows. The reason why is Zacatecas is a mining town. It's one of the first places that was colonized by the Spaniards.
By the Spanish, yes. Yeah.
So it has a huge Spanish influence. If you go to the city of Zacatecas, it's just this beautiful Baroque-style architecture. It's a town in Europe, lost in Mexico, in the middle of the desert. There's absolutely no resources other than a lot of mining. So mezcal there has an ancestry of being very pure with regards of its production process, and I'll explain a little bit why. When you make wine, there's this religious, almost religious intent, just doing a lot of very good work behind the grapes and the flavor of the grapes and the quality of the grapes and the soil, but the grapes is the key.
Right. And then the terroir in general is what we're really,
yes,
talking about here.
Exactly. Yeah. And the casket, right? Yeah. So those are the two main ingredients. And if you go and look at the mezcal made in Zacatecas, which to this day and age, very few people know mezcals from Zacatecas, you will find that those are the most pure, and I don't mean this in a positive or denigrating any other type of mezcal, because we make mezcal in other regions as well, but it's a very, they do a lot of work to not add any single other flavor, ingredient, or component outside of the main ingredient, which in this case is agave, which I'm comparing it to the grapes, and the caskets. And so you
for when we're talking about the casks, the aging vessels.
Exactly, the
right
casks. And yeah, we're going to jump into why miel de tierra. So the mezcal that comes out from this region has a lot of winemaking institution behind it. Mm-hmm. You will not find mezcals from Zacatecas that are smoky. You will not find mezcals from Zacatecas that are ashy. You will not find mezcals from Zacatecas that have the clay from distillation, and I think it's very they're very clean, and they are very ageable. They are the most ageable mezcals that you will find.
Now tell us why that is. Why is that the case?
Oh, that's the case because there's so few ingredients in added or so other components, and we can go into the technicalities later, that the flavor or the, how it absorbs the wood from the cask, it has just nothing else but the agave and the wood. It just absorbs it fully. So the quality of the cask is super important. You will rarely find a mezcal from Zacatecas that is not aged. Rarely.
Okay. And how long of aging are we talking about, Juan Pablo, roughly?
We are
typical. What would be typical?
For a Reposado, you're talking about borderline 11 months. If you go over 1 month and it starts going, and it goes to the añejo, and after 3 years it's extra añejo. But the
so no Joven, we're not seeing Joven there at
it
all.
Exists and, okay. And I love this, it exists, but it exists only as a formality, the same kind of the same way in the southern states of Mexico, which is totally different deal, than they have reposados and añejos. They have reposados and añejos just because the category evolved. But if you go to south of Mexico, Joven is the king. Mm-hmm. Like right. Caskets are they're no use there. The only reason we have caskets is because there's the only place you can store wine or you can store alcohol. They weren't added for a flavor component in the very beginning.
Right.
It just became a tradition, and so it's a meaning of storing the wine.
It's a vessel in which to store.
It's right. That's it, right? Yeah. And so in Zacatecas, all of it, basically all of it, the main point of it is they have excellent añejos, excellent añejos, clean. Easy drinking, a lot of wood in there, almost like a cognac style. Mm-hmm. And you give that to somebody who's a mezcal expert in Oaxaca, and they lose their heads. They are like, I mean, this is I don't even know what I'm drinking.
And this is a good way to also introduce people. If you're not familiar with mezcal, this particular style that you're talking about is a great way to introduce people if you're a bourbon drinker, mm-hmm. or if you're a whiskey drinker.
Oh, yes.
You're going to find that kind of bridge here with that.
Oh, you know, you hit the nail on the head there again, because when we launched our first brand, which was this Reposado you're looking at right here, and we gave it out to people in Mexico, some people in Mexico are kind of they have this stigma that mezcal is very rough. It's very complex. It's a destilly that's complex. That it's not right. It's not, if you have to know what you're drinking, right? What I mean.
Right.
And people, when they started having this and they knew there were mezcal, and I did the catering by myself, hand catered it to a lot of people for many years, and some of them were just very very reluctant to try because they think they knew what mezcal was. And then they tried it, or this style of mezcal, they tried it, and they were like, huh, I didn't know this was possible. It was a very smooth tasting, very light, very wooden, very sweet type of mezcal. And they were like, this is not mezcal. And I was like, that's my point. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their own idea of what mezcal is, and that's what makes the category so beautiful
and very broad. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a little break, Juan Pablo, and we're going to actually taste, because we've been talking about it and I'm thirsty. So we're going to taste a little bit. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about the two styles and expressions of mezcal that they have here with Miel de Tierra, Honey of the Earth. Friends, coming back to the NOLA Drink Show.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street, or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in the podcast land wherever you are. We are chatting with Juan Pablo Gonzalez from Miel de Tierra, a fine artisanal mezcal distillery in Zacatecas, which is, you know, we might think things a little bit more coastal when we think about mezcal. This is a central part of the country for the most part. And, well, we were just talking about, so Miel de Tierra means honey of the sky. And tell us briefly about
right.
that story.
Right, so to drive the point home a little bit, I found out that really small distilleries were in the center of Mexico, where they made their own caskets. They make their own caskets, and they do it because they don't have the volume yet to be selling or trading caskets with other big companies. That's kind of what they do. So a really nice thing about that is, when you have to make your own caskets, you use them from scratch when the wood is absolutely virgin. So in our distillery,
just so people are clear, because I want to, a lot of people, what they'll do is they will bring bourbon casks down, bourbon barrels down.
Exactly, right? And cognac also.
And cognac and brandy occasionally, and these sorts of things.
Exactly. Jose Cuervo was big on that.
Yeah, right. And that's very common in any tequila production, uh-huh. right? And just so as we know, technically, I just want to clarify for listeners that we talk about mezcal. Mezcal is a very broad category. Technically, tequila is a mezcal because mm-hmm. it is made from agave.
Exactly.
Don't want to distract. But so you guys are making your own casks, and what kind of wood are you using to do that then?
It's red oak. Oak caskets.
Yeah.
They're grown in the region.
Yeah.
There's a big forestry area in there. So when you make the caskets from scratch, you have this tree sap that's really thick, amber looking, sticky tree sap that you can only get when you make the caskets from scratch. And that tree sap is very sweet, very aromatic. It's called la miel de tierra. Earth's honey.
Got it.
It's
Makes
called
sense.
Locally.
Yeah. Okay.
And so if you go to the cellar where we have all the caskets, you just see this huge caskets, and they're just dripping, not mezcal, but they're dripping
with the sap of the tree.
With the sap, yeah. Just this huge. It's all covered. It all leaks through them, and it just infuses a mezcal in a way that it's unique in the region. And so if you enter the cellar and you smell, you don't smell just the wood. It barely smells of wood. It smells so much of the amber. And like you're in a pine cone forest or whatever. So that's a huge distinction. And if you give it a small whiff,
on the reposado. We're doing a reposado. And yes. This has been aged for how long?
This one is 11 months.
In 11 months.
Yes.
Okay. So if it went much further, it would be an añejo then.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's borderline. So if you give it a small sip, you'll try a trace of wood and a little bit, taste the amber, like if you were biting a piece of
as you said earlier when we were out there, there's a pine
yes.
on this. Actually, the pine note is quite prevalent on this.
Yes, exactly. So you can really, really taste it, and I like it because it's a very simple exercise of trying these. Mezcals that are simple are really easy to categorize.
Yeah.
They're really easy to figure out. But that doesn't mean they're better. It just means that they are more of a simple kind of mezcal to trace, so it's easy to acquire. So people that they don't know mezcal, they really get excited for this type of for this type of
this actually makes a lot of sense. And we just started tasting here, Juan Pablo, as you said. So if you think, as many people might be turned off by absinthe, for example, because they don't like licorice.
Uh-huh.
And they just say, I don't like licorice, so I don't like absinthe. And there's a in the whole pastis family, there is a much broader perspective. So if you say that you don't like mezcal because I don't like smoky. Well, that's not necessarily fair either. There's a little bit of smoke on this, but there's a spiciness.
Mm-hmm.
This reads like an agave. I mean, so for some of you, and I don't want to denigrate, to use your word at one point, this will read to many people more like a tequila, finely made tequila might read, than what you might think that mezcal is.
Definitely, and my question for those people, is that a bad thing?
Not at all.
When you ask, when you look at the tequila history, tequila is such a young player. It's definitely a popular player, but it's definitely the youngest player in the agave spirits industry.
Absolutely.
So there is no fault to be had in these ancestral types of mezcal that a younger brother is hugely popular, such as tequila. And the reason in Mexico a lot of people are moving from tequila to mezcal is because tequila nowadays is super popular and demand has just been booming, and the industrialization process from tequila is crazy. You can go to the biggest factories, and there is barely any difference between an industrial factory and a tequila factory anymore.
And this is, and things that we won't get into here on this show, but that understanding that we are talking with a limited environmental resource that is agave.
Exactly.
The pressure on the traditional way of life, as well as the pressure on the traditional, natural resource itself is tremendous.
Right.
With the growth in the category.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And so that's the reason behind Miel de Tierra. And another thing I want to mention really quick is that we do a lot of social work regarding the protection of honeybees in Mexico. And the reason we do that is because in Mexico we have a very big problem of real estate development in some places. And I don't know if you know this, but northeastern Mexico is one of the largest places for beekeeping. So it's just a huge industry there. And beekeeping, by definition, can only be sustained when you have wild flowers on the premises.
And then problems with pesticide use as it influences the bee colonies as well.
Exactly.
So with growing industrial agriculture.
Exactly. And industrial agriculture, even if you don't have any pesticides there, it's a big problem, because when you have when you have crops, and I want to go into this.
You monocrop.
They bloom at the same time. And when they bloom at the same time, the bees work themselves to death because they have three days to...
Yeah, you're monocropping, right? You're growing one thing, and we need a diversity of pollen.
They die.
Yes.
And that's so sad. So so we cannot escape from the fact that we need a wild cropping, so wild
diversity of plants.
Exactly.
Diversity of plants with diversity of timing, diversity of pollens.
Right. So what we do, just to finish this up quickly, is we regrow regions that have been land cleared. And they just land clear them for no reason, because they want to see if they do a development there or not. And it's very simple. You just grow this four or five species of flowers that bloom many times in the same year. And that's just the bread and butter of honeybees. Those same honeybees that pollinate our crops.
Absolutely.
So it's super important. And
plays into the name as well. I like that a lot.
That plays into the name. And so actually every bottle of what we sell has this label that says Save the Bees
Foundation. We'll post a picture of this too, the Miel de Tierra of the Joven. Well, not to rush you on, Pablo, but we got about 2 minutes left and I do want to get to this. So tell us a little bit about
the other one. The other mezcal is the Salmiana. It's from San Luis Potosí. It's another lesser known region. So we specialize in lesser known regions of mezcal. That's what we like to do. And this one is made from the wild agave Salmiana, which is native to the state of San Luis Potosí, which is a kind of small, more rocky terrain type of agave, and the process of making it is slightly different from the one in Zacatecas, but it's also very different from the one in Oaxaca. So again, we are doing a lot of effort to show how different they can be, and that's the whole point behind our category. You're not going to find mezcals in our category that are alike.
This is very, because this is a bit more herbal driven, a bit more pepper
driven. Herbal.
If you like New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc,
this is a mezcal New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
It's actually very pleasant because you get the herbal note up front. There's a very fine finish. I get a little floral finish on this, and I actually get just a touch of baking spice, but the herbal finish up front. But it's not overdone. It's actually this is a very unique.
It's a very balanced. Yeah. And if you just smell the both of them, you're thinking it's a rum and it's a gin. Like, they're so different.
Absolutely.
And that's the point. You never figure this out. And a mezcal enthusiast or a pseudo mezcal enthusiast will not be able to tell that this is mezcal. And that's why mezcal is so rich and so complex. So
this is very nice. I get more of a floral note, like a honeysuckle note on this.
Yeah.
This is very, both of them are very enjoyable.
But very different, are they not?
Extremely different. And extremely different from what a lot of people might think mezcal actually is, which I do find that to be the truth.
Exactly.
Well, do me a favor, Juan Pablo. We got about 15, 20 seconds left. Tell people where they can find you online.
They can find us online at mieldetierra.com. And there you can find everything about our awards. We didn't talk about that, about our Save the Bees, the tasting notes. We've gotten some phenomenal awards in the last 3 years, some of the top rated awards. We'll drive into that later. But that's where they can find us on social media as well, in Mezcal MDT on Instagram. We have a very big Instagram account. That's where we post most of this stuff. We beautiful photos of our bottles and our conservation efforts, and that's where you can find us.
Here's what we'll do is when I'll let you know, I'll get in touch with you when we air this in a couple of weeks. I'll let you know, and then we'll make sure on our Facebook page and everything else that more of the links are posted.
Beautiful.
Like
beautiful.
Juan Pablo, thanks, man. Thanks for sharing. I appreciate it. Love the chat and like to chat with you again, because I do like a little bit more of the depth of the story. We'll get to that.
Definitely, Brian. Thank you so much. My pleasure,
man. Thank you. Friends, come on back to the NOLA Drink Show.
No use for you to cry. I see you by and by. Till I'm walking to New Orleans.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event, or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We ought to stay until it's too lost soul.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thank you for listening. We are here at Tales of the Cocktail 2017, and we're doing all kinds of fun stuff. We are now over here at Sylvain Restaurant, thanks to Robert LeBlanc and the Blanc-Smith Restaurant Group for letting us set up camp here and do a little bit of the show. Pleased to be joined by my next guest, Graciela Gonzalez.
Yes.
Yes, from Distilleria Gonzalez.
That is right. Yeah. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. So just for those of us who didn't understand my terrible Spanish accent, that's the Gonzalez and Gonzalez Distilleria, or distillery, I'll say. And Graciela, you're the co-owner and also the brand ambassador.
Yes, that is right.
Yeah. And so you live in Guadalajara, is that correct?
I do live in Guadalajara, where we have our distillery. And I work every day at the distillery, and I travel around the states representing two brands, Exotico and El Mayor, that we produce in that distillery.
Great. Now, is this the first time that you've been to Tales of the Cocktail, or have you been here before?
No, this is my very first time, so I'm very excited.
Great. And how long has the brand been around, or either brand or both?
Well, actually, the distillery, we started it, my father started it 30 years ago. And with the brand El Mayor, we started probably, it was 12 years ago with the new face.
Okay.
And Exotico was 6 years ago.
Okay. And so has this been, it's been a family business the entire time then?
Yes, my family has been in the industry for over 150 years.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not that old. I'm the fourth generation. So, yes, it's a family-owned company. So, yeah.
Great. Now, so did grandparents get involved, great-grandparents get involved? Were they working in other distilleries and things before you all, the family, opened your own?
Actually, yes. So my father learned from his grandfather how to produce tequila in a different distillery. And as I was saying, 30 years ago, he decided to go independent and created Destiladora González González. And now he's the owner. And Paul, my brother, and myself, we work also at the distillery. But the whole family has been, as I said before, 150 in another distillery. Yes.
Okay, got it. Okay. So it's a very long, obviously a very long history. How many people work at the distillery typically?
100 people right now.
Okay. And do you all do you work with local farmers or anything to get your agave for the tequila, or do you have your own agave growing ability?
So most of the agave that we get, especially for our premium brands, actually no, for our premium brands, we only get the agave from the plantations that we own.
Okay.
So we have right now about 200 people hired at the fields. We own over 93 fields, different sizes. Some are very small. But we also buy, not out in the market, we have some societies with other agave farmers that we have been working for years with them. So the way that we do this is that we rent their lands and we grow our agave, but from the same mother plants, the little agaves that we're planting with them.
Okay. So I got you. That makes a lot of sense. So you're working with local independent farmers to help you out then?
Exactly.
Okay. That's great. Well, let's do this. We're going to sip on a couple things here, and let's taste the Exotico Blanco. It's a white tequila. Why do sometimes, this is a random question, why do sometimes people call white tequila silver? Is that a marketing thing? I've never really understood that, or do you know?
Well, I'll guess so. It's more in marketing. A Blanco, what really means when you were speaking about a tequila Blanco is that totally unrested. Right now, although you call your tequila Blanco, it can be rested as long as it's a little bit less than 2 months. Our Blancos, all the Blancos that we produce at Destiladora González González are totally unrested. And the only reason why we don't rest it at all, it's because we want to show the world the true flavor of tequila. And we do believe that in order to show the real taste of agave, you have to do it in a Blanco. Of course, we have a Reposado, Añejo, and Extrañejo, but all our Blancos totally unrested.
So can you tell people, Grace, what rested means, just so they know?
Rested is that they spend, in order to call you Reposado, by law, it has to sit in a barrel at least for 2 months. Rested. It gets a little bit of the flavor, the color from the barrels, but at least for 2 months and less than a year.
Got it. And so in the case of the Blanco, no wood, no
wood. You're not going to be able to find any vanilla, any nice things that you get from the barrel, but you're going to be able to find very amazing things that you get from the agave.
And
okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's an important thing that I want to touch on here, and thank you for saying that, is that I like to highlight that sometimes people, when they drink spirits, be it tequila or anything, that they don't understand I'll use the wine term, terroir, and how the terroir really matters. And we are dealing with an agricultural product with agave.
Exactly. So it's very important. I keep telling my customers that it's super important not to shave all the flavors and the acids that the agave give you. Otherwise, you might as well have a spirit very plain.
Right.
Like we have other ones. But in the case of tequila, you don't want that. You want all the earthiness and all the herbal hints that you get. And even though we're talking about tequila, if you train your palate and you take the time, you're going to be able even to find some sweet hints. Although we're talking about
Absolutely.
The Blanco.
Yeah,
okay.
I get a little bit of sort of a honeysuckle and a touch of floral on this as well.
That's very interesting because few people catch up on this, but in our tequilas, one thing that makes our distillery very special is that we're able to enhance all the floral hints that you get from agave. Still, without you losing the earthiness that you're expecting, the kick that you expect from tequila, and also some spiciness that you are supposed to get.
I'm definitely getting some spiciness on this as well, Grace, and I'm also getting a nice smoky note on this that I typically don't always get on a Blanco as well, mostly on the palate more than on the nose.
It is a little bit more on the palate, and the only reason, and if my father would be here doing this interview, the reason why we have such an excellent tequila, it's because of the quality of the agave we use. Of course, every single step in the process is going to change the profile of your tequila, and we'll talk a little bit more about this when we try the other tequila, El Mayor. But definitely it has to do with the quality of the agave and then the way that we cook the agave, for how long we cook it, and the meals. It's very important, the meals. When we're producing our tequilas, we try not to touch any fibers of the agave. Not that it's a bad thing, it's just a different profile. So this is why our tequilas are very smooth.
So, okay, so that's what I was going to ask. So by doing that, by not disrupting the fibers as much, as that does lend to the mouthfeel and the smoothness?
Exactly. So with this one, it's going to be like a little bit spicier. I wouldn't say hardish, but it's a little bit more bold than El Mayor, which is the second one that we're going to try.
Okay.
Because for this one, we do touch a little bit the fibers. And the only reason why we do it, it's because when we were creating Exotico line, my father wanted to achieve very fresh, smooth tequila, but bold enough to stood up with cocktails. So this was just like made especially for the bar scene. So this is why it's so crisp, fun, playful, and even the image, it's just like very eye-catching.
And you said that, so there is definitely, it is fairly bold. I mean, the spicy notes that we're talking about, a touch of that smokiness that we're getting on that, gonna go nice like in a margarita, obviously. So sometimes, because as you're noting here, I think white tequilas can be a little bit, they'll get run over in a cocktail, for lack of a better way to put it.
Yes. But this one, it would stand up, definitely. If you make like a Bloody Maria, it's just perfect.
That's always a favorite of mine, the Bloody Maria. So for folks who don't know what a Bloody Maria is, that is basically a Bloody Mary, but with tequila instead of vodka. So is this all blue agave in the Blanco as well, or is this a mix of different agave?
So for tequila, by law, you can only use one kind of agave, which is called blue agave, tequilana.
Yep.
It's called tequilana because we basically use it for tequila. Azul, because actually azul means blue.
Blue.
So the plant is actually blue. And Weber, because Weber was the last name of the botanical person that took all the time to make the differentiations between all the agavacias.
Right. Okay. And I, you know, so sometimes I think we read that some of the larger produced brands, the mass produced brands, are not necessarily using 100% blue agave. Is that
no?
Correct?
They all. If your label states it's tequila, it's made by the same agave. It doesn't matter if you're a small distillery or a big one. It has to be that way. It is protected by the CRT, which is the Consejo Regulador del Tequila, which is the chamber that protects all the regulations of tequila.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a very nice one. I really like the Blanco, and we're going to taste the Reposado. What we're going to do here, friends, on the NOLA Drink Show, we're chatting with Graciela Gonzalez of Distilleria Gonzalez. There's no E in the middle, right? It's not Gonzalez. E Gonzalez. It's just,
No, it's okay. Gonzalez.
I like that. And we are talking a little bit about tequila. We're going to come back, and we're going to taste the Reposado and a couple other things related to Graciela's background in the industry. Friends, come on back to the NOLA Drink Show.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc. A great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickey Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. It's 716 Iberville.
I wonder why my baby drinks so much wine. If she keeps a drinking, she's gonna lose her mind. She's a wine-head woman, don't you know? She's a wine-head woman, don't you know? I hate to do it, but I just got to let her go.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. As you know, we are chatting tequila with Graciela Gonzalez from the Gonzalez Distillery, or Distilleria Gonzalez. There you go. And we tasted the Blanco a little bit, and we're going to taste the Reposado in just a minute. But and we're also joined a special celebrity walk-on here, Teddy Blumenthal, General Manager of Sylvain. Hey, buddy.
Hello, hello.
Hey, thanks for hosting us and letting us record here today.
Well, of course, anything to taste some tequila?
Oh, that's why you're here.
Obviously.
Okay, got it.
This. No rides come free.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
I thought you just wanted to be on the show, but that's cool. It's the tequila. It makes all the sense in the world.
Same tequila. What else could a man want?
Absolutely. Well, Graciela, one of the things that we were talking about, because I'm a very observant guy, we noted that you're a woman working in the industry.
Yes.
And how is that? I know you have some thoughts on that. How is that? It's kind of a male-dominated world in a lot of ways, right? And it's changing.
It is, but it's changing. I think that more women we get involved. And just to let you know a little bit, do you have any idea who is the number one consumer of tequila?
I do know that it is actually females.
Well, there you go. And by, so it would make sense.
Yeah, it's like 65% or something,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly, it is. Huge. It's almost 70%. And I'm very, very glad that there's a lot of women interested in the business. And the business has been kind enough to open to us also. I guess it was big, at the beginning it was a little bit hard, but it started to change. And the business started changing with us also. So I think that having more females in this kind of business also opens the opportunity to create new types of tequilas. Not types, but like more innovation into it. Going from mild to harder, spicy, not spicy. So I think that it's opening a whole new doors for the tequila.
You touched on something really interesting, and Teddy, maybe you observe this too, that I noticed I went to a seminar some time ago, and it was on bourbon, and there was a tasting panel, and it was all led by expert tasters who were all women, and one of the misconceptions is, oh, you know, we're gonna make this drink, and it's gonna be really low in alcohol, and it's gonna be soft, and it's gonna be in a pink bottle, and all that kind of stuff, and I'm overstating greatly, but that's not what people prefer, and actually in the bourbon world, I know that's not the case, and I'm guessing that's not the case. And I don't think that happens in this bar.
No, I mean, I think that there's a place for the sort of drink you're talking about on, you know, on every menu, and, you know, every base liquor is going to have some drinks that develop with that, you know, that kind of theme. But, you know, that's, vodka pays the bills, but, you know, pink vodka and rosé wine are not all that, you know, bars sell, especially.
Yeah,
well, like and, this
you know,
one.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, kind of what we're talking about is not stereotyping.
Right.
Exactly, and I think there's considerable stereotyping, and that's sure. really not the reality of the situation, especially when we're talking about tequila and tequila consumption. Well, let's taste the Reposado, Grace, and tell us a little bit about that.
So the one that we're tasting right now, it's called El Mayor Reposado. This is a very special line. I'll give you a little bit of story about it. It's that when my father created this line, what he was trying to achieve, it was to create a line of tequilas, going back to the tasting profiles, that you were able to sip from Blanco to Reposado, Añejo, and Extrañejo, without having that hardish kick that you're expecting from tequila, but still having all the goodness and all the earthiness that you are expecting from tequila, right? So something that it's elegant, mild, but still strong enough that lingers in your palate. So that's how he came up with this line. And also very special thing about this line, it's that the name El Mayor means the eldest. Mm-hmm. And my father wanted to kind of like honor the person that showed him how to make tequila, which was his grandfather. So that's why he named it the eldest.
Oh, that's very nice. Okay, great.
So that being said, this Reposado is rested at least for 9 months in used bourbon barrels. It doesn't mean that if you let your tequila rest for a little bit longer or a little bit less, it's better or worse. 9 months, just because when he was creating the line, he decided that for his palate, that was perfect. There is nothing against it. All the color and all the aromas that you're going to get from the Blanco to Reposado only come from the barrel. So this is very, very special.
Now, when you cross that line, when do you cross the line from going from being a Reposado to an Añejo? What's the time?
Well, in order to call your tequila Añejo, it has to sit at least for 1 year in a barrel. For instance, the one that we have for El Mayor, it sits at least for 18 months.
Okay.
It's a little bit over what they're asking, but again, the only reason it's just because by the time that my father was making the profile of this line, he decided that for him it was perfect. And I have to agree with him. It's amazing.
That's very nice. And what do you think here, Teddy? What are your thoughts on this?
Lovely. I mean, you really do get a lot of that kind of burnt oak from the bourbon barrels.
Mm-hmm.
It carries a lot of that spice without kind of roughing up too much. You know,
exactly.
It's a really easy drinking tequila there.
Yeah, I get some baking spice notes on this, some cocoa notes, and
That's very interesting, a lot of cocoa. You can actually get some, I don't know if you get like a little bit of cinnamon.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's depending where you pay attention. If you pay attention in the front part of your palate, you're going to be able to open for all the earthiness and spices.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pay attention a little bit to more in the back of your palate, you're going to be able to open even for brown sugar. I don't know if you get it.
Yeah, that's those sort of baking spices that I'm talking about. You get this sort of brown sugar, chocolate, cocoa note on it.
Very much.
Yeah. What about you, Teddy? What else are you getting from this?
I get a little bit of vegetal notes on it, honestly, especially on kind of first impression before some of that baking spice takes over.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite the green pepper jalapeno, but definitely just a little bit of that greenness to it that, you know, fades very quickly into the rest of it. It's definitely a long, complex drink.
Yeah. What I really like about Reposados, it's like you're moving from the Blanco that has, as you were saying, like all the Serrano notes or like green apples and earthiness and everything. It's moving like a little bit more towards the elegant side, like a little bit more of, as we were saying, cinnamon and brown sugar. Still, you have spices, just different kind of spices, which is very important in tequila. You don't want to lose that.
And it's, exactly, and more of a multi-dimensional kind of process, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so when we go from the, say, the Añejo to the Extra Añejo, which I know you guys do, is there a legal definition of Extra Añejo and how much time it has to rest?
It has to rest at least, well, actually, it's not called resting anymore. You're aging it.
Now you're
also
aging.
With the Añejo.
Okay, right.
So it has to age at least for 3 years. So ours aged for 3 years, and we start tasting the barrels. A lot of people tell me, well, Grace, that doesn't really make sense. I mean, you go over for the Reposado, you go over for the Añejo. Why with the Extrañejo you start tasting your barrels right after 3 years? And the only reason why we do that, you have to be very careful. If you leave it long enough, and you never know how the barrel is going to behave, you might as well have a very expensive bourbon.
Yeah, that it makes a lot 12, of sense because yeah, it exactly. just overwhelms right at that point.
So you don't want that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, with I do find that the Reposado here is a very nice, like we were talking about the Blanco being very cocktail friendly because mm-hmm. it's pretty bold and that sort of thing. I find that the Reposado could quite easily go in either direction, meaning that I could sip on this neat like we're doing right now, mm-hmm. but I could also find, because it is there, the spice is there, this could go quite nicely in a cocktail as well.
Yeah, that is definitely right.
Yeah, I can definitely see this in a spirit-forward cocktail.
Yep.
You know, you see a lot of mezcal old-fashions, and, you know, we have a Sotol mm-hmm. and tequila blend old-fashioned on the menu, which is using a Blanco that I think, you know, is kind of in that place to avoid overwhelming mm-hmm. The Sotol. But really, I think that spirit is strong enough that something like this that has that kind of depth of flavor, and especially that kind of has that earthiness on the back end that's mm-hmm. going to reinforce the Sotol mm-hmm. or reinforce another kind of, you know, offbeat spirit like that could make it a really strong candidate for something like that, where I wouldn't necessarily normally put a Reposado that can be, you know, flavorful but light and delicate
right.
in that exactly. place.
Yeah, and you want, like you said, you want it spirit forward, so you're doing the tequila a service.
Yeah.
Right? Well, we got about a minute or so left here. Grace, can you tell people where online they can find, not where in stores, we don't have to worry about that. She's looking over here at Jenna, PR person, but like where can we find, what about the website, Facebook, all that stuff?
Well, we have elmayor.com and exotico.com.
Okay, great.
So you can find all the information, a little bit about our history, and many fun facts. So I would highly recommend you to go online.
Excellent, wonderful. And you got, and the tequila is available in the market in Louisiana.
Yes, it is available in the market.
Okay, great. And how long are you here in town for Tales for?
I'm leaving until Friday.
Okay.
Yes.
Wonderful. Grace, thank you so much for taking time. I appreciate
thank
it. Thank you for sharing
me.
The tequila.
My
absolutely.
Pleasure. Thank yeah. you. Friend, thank
Teddy,
you
thanks for the celebrity walk on there, buddy.
Oh, anytime.
It's wonderful. Friends, we're here at Sylvain. We were talking a little bit of tequila with Graciela Gonzalez from Distilleria Gonzalez. Some lovely tequilas. And hey, we're going to come back with a little bit more from Sylvain. Come on back.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans.
and in podcast land, wherever you are. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, hope you enjoyed that round of interviews from Tales of the Cocktail. Lots more of good stuff that way to come. We took a little trip to Mexico, as I mentioned, some really interesting things to taste. I want to thank Grace, Larry, and Juan Pablo for being on the show. Lots of fun. Hey, friends, wanted to mention the show next week. Coming up here, we're going to focus on bourbon. I like bourbon. I hope you like bourbon, too. And what we're going to do is actually the first bourbon, New Orleans Bourbon Festival, believe it or not, we didn't have one of those. The first one was just this last spring, and that was a great event. And it's actually, they've already announced the dates for next spring, and tickets have gone on sale, so on and so forth. A good guy named Tracy Napolitano, who is actually just an avid bourbon collector, is the guy behind it. There's a charitable component to all this. The cool thing is there's the grand tasting, but one of the things that they also do is that they do a day of seminars, which were fascinating. It was probably my favorite part, really. Well, okay, I like drinking the bourbon and eating the food, too. But, well, the seminars, actually, some of them had bourbon in them. So there you go. But some really cool seminars going on and things like that. I'm assuming they're going to do that again. So we're going to have Tracy on the show. We're going to actually be taping the show at Barrel Proof. So actually, we're going to start taping around 3 o'clock. Barrel Proof opens at 4. So we're going to do a little bit of the show into when they open next Tuesday. So if you're in the area and you want to stop by and say hi, we'll be there taping from, you know, 3 to 5, 3 to 5:30, something like that, give or take. There at Barrel Proof, we're going to be sipping on some bourbon. We're going to talk to Liam Deegan, who is the co-proprietor, along with Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith that runs that place. As we mentioned, Sylvain, stuff like that. You all know that. So they're going to be there, and one or two other guests. We're going to talk about bourbon. Yeah, I just said that. So that'll be next week's show. Wanted to actually, you know what? I want to mention a little bit of sad news. David Montes de Oca, who is a restaurateur in Kenner, he is the owner, or was the owner. He passed away unexpectedly at the young age of 36. He was hanging out with some friends at a hotel, and apparently said he felt tired, went into the bathroom, and never came to again. He runs Taqueria Chilangos, which is at the 2700 block of Roosevelt Boulevard in Kenner, and they won... they were the surprise champion at the Top Taco Festival, which also was an inaugural festival right around the time of Bourbon Fest this past spring here. I happen to have the great honor of being a judge on the cocktail side, and I was hearing this buzz, okay, about the Taqueria Chilangos, and so after I finished judging the cocktails, I went over to get a couple tacos, and I met him briefly. Super nice guy, very passionate about what he did, and they were certainly the best tacos. The article was actually reported in The Advocate by Ian McNulty and Ramon Antonio Vargas initially here, and one of the things that they mentioned is that they were sort of the surprise champion of Top Taco. In my estimation, not a surprise at all. Yes, it was very traditional, but that's why it was good. It was solid. It was awesome. And anyway, really sad. I know he leaves a family behind. They did say that the restaurant, they're going to close temporarily, but the restaurant will continue on, so that's good news. Montes de Oca, actually, it's an interesting story. He came from Mexico at a young age, at 15, I believe, was in Houston. And after he bought a food truck, and after Katrina, he drove his food truck from Houston to New Orleans and started feeding workers that were helping rebuild the area here. And then he moved into the standing restaurant there at Taqueria Chilangos. So an American success story, of course, a great guy, and sad to see that he's gone. I'm glad that the restaurant will continue. Go check it out. 2700 block there in Kenner on Roosevelt Boulevard. So talking about food also, moving on, Culinary Month. If you are not familiar with Culinary Month, you need to be familiar with Culinary Month. It is all of August, the whole month, and it's put on by our good friends there at the Convention and Visitors Bureau, otherwise known as the CVB, and they pull a whole bunch of restaurants together to offer fixed-priced menus, always a dinner. And the dinner, it's always a 3-course dinner. It's got to be priced at $39 or less. A lot of people do lunch or brunch too. With a 2-course lunch, it could be a 2-course lunch has to be $20 or less. And if you do brunch, it can be 3 courses for the $39 or less price. Last year, there were 80 restaurants that participated in Culinary Month. There are now 106 signed up. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And for that kind of price, and it's sort of a who's who kind of thing that goes on here. A lot of the restaurants are new faces, and a lot of them are old faces. So like Brigston's restaurant, a fantabulous place there. Go check them out. They're participating. A new one is Avo, a really cool place. It's a great chance if you haven't been to Arno's in a while, or you haven't been to any of the Dickie Brennan restaurants, Palace Cafe, Bourbon House, the Steakhouse, or Tableau.
they're all participating. So that's a really good chance to go try those guys. Dante's Kitchen, I know uptown, way uptown, is participating. Two Jags, Galatoire's, Pascal's, Manali, Arno's. These are some of the grand dames, of course, in the restaurant scene here in New Orleans. If you haven't had a chance to go to those in a long time, have never had a chance to go, go check those out because they're excellent. Very, 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 very good. And it's a lot of fun. And again, it runs the whole month. And then it kind of leads into a restaurant week, which takes place September 11th through the 17th. And a lot of what happened last year, I know, is that a lot of the folks that that were participating in Culinary Month, they actually just carried on the menu all the way through Restaurant Week. That's also a CVB-sponsored event where they do a similar idea. So it kind of almost, with a lot of these places, as I said, becomes sort of a culinary month and a half, if you will, not just culinary month. So it's a great opportunity to do that and try some of these places for quite a while. You know, go check a few off your list. Some other ones include Tube South. We just interviewed Chef Michael Galata last week over there. Also, Tube South is Isaac Tubes, of course, at the Food and Beverage Museum here right next door. But then what I was going to say is that we interviewed Chef Michael Galata last week at his spot Maypop in the CBD. He also operates Mofo, but Maypop is participating. Great chance to try that brand new super awesome place, Tsunami Sushi. The brand new distillery there on St. Charles, Lula Distillery and Restaurants participating. All kinds of cool spots to go try. And one of the whole idea hatched a few years ago, and the idea was to attract locals during the slow months of summer. We talk a lot about that on the show. Lots of times we talk about the bad parts of that on the show. This is a positive. And so it's, again, it brings out a lot of locals to go try spots throughout the month. I always try and pick off, you know, two or three each time, you know, try some for lunch, try a couple spots for dinner, get back to some place that I haven't been to in a number of years, especially some of the classic places, which is always a lot of fun. But one of the things too, is that it does seem to be changing a little bit. There's some notes here that now, because of the way the menu works, the number of restaurants, again, as I mentioned, up from 80 last year to 106 this year, is that we're getting folks that come from out of town that try the restaurants. They come for the event or for the month because they can take advantage of the dining scene here, which is, of course, extraordinary. And what a great idea. Come to town and see us in August. And like this weekend's awesome, right? You can go to Satchmo Fest, free music festival there at the Mint. Come for a long weekend. Go hit up some of these great restaurants for a good price. Hotel rooms tend to be a little less expensive during this time of year, so you can get a pretty nice room for like 60, 70, 80 bucks just right there, say like in the lower CBD or even in the French Quarter, and stay here in town. Do a staycation if you're from here in town, and check it out. And yeah, it's a really cool thing. So you'll see us out there eating. We'll be around. We're going to be doing that. So that'll be a lot of fun. And there you go. So check it out. If you're looking for more information, you can go to culinaryneworleans.com, which is culinaryneworleans.com. If you go to the CVB, the Convention and Visitors Bureau website, you'll be led right there as well, and find out they have the list of all the restaurants. As a matter of fact, they're giving a chance to win a dinner for six at Brigston's restaurant. That's pretty good. So you can enter the contest there on the culinary website. Go check it out. Going to be a lot of fun coming up here. Friends, as I mentioned, next week, we're going to be taping the show at Barrel Proof, which will be a lot of fun, talking bourbon. I know in some of the coming days, we're going to get back to some of our Tales of the Cocktail interviews, which will also be a lot of fun. Really looking forward to the Cachaça one. That was Agenor Macari, who is the master distiller, and Luke McKinley, who is our marketing guy, talked to us. And Agenor is from Brazil. Very passionate. They're a very environmentally responsible company in what they do, using recycled glass, sustainable agriculture for their sugarcane, locally grown sugarcane. The breadth of Cachaça that they have, and this is a hot category that you need to know, is amazing. So we're going to try and get to that one pretty soon. We talked to Miriam Hendricks of Rutte, R-U-T-T-E distillery there in the Netherlands. We talk about their interesting gins as well as Genevers. We got some whiskey stuff coming up. We got some Armagnac stuff coming up. Really cool stuff. So that'll be just on the horizon as we roll more of those out. Friends, I hope you have a great weekend. I hope you're able to get out there to Satchmo Fest here this weekend. Check it out. Go do check out Culinary Month. Go support our local restaurants this time of year. It's a great opportunity for you to eat at a good price. They'd be happy to see you in these slow months. Good food, good price. Keep our economy going here in New Orleans. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, it's August. Yeah, it's hot. But there's good food and there's good music because we are here in New Orleans. Friends, have a great weekend. And until next week, cheers, y'all.